The following presentation is brought to you by Priority One.
Okay, Rabbi Isai, how are you? Okay, let's begin. First things first, I guess I should say my name is Zev Cohen, Shalom Aleichem. Some of you know me, some of you, I'm introducing myself. Where is the mitzvah of chinuch in the Torah? Everything tonight is about parenting. This tonight is teaching by example the art of proper role modeling, but everything is based on the concept of chinuch. So where's the mitzvah of chinuch in the Torah? The answer is, according to most Paiskim, there is no mitzvah of chinuch in the Torah. Mitzvah of chinuch is in Mishlei, chanuch l'nar pidarko, but there is no doraisa for chinuch, which is in and of itself fascinating, why there is no mitzvah in the Torah to be mechanech our children. But maybe as we progress, we'll talk about that. I'm not sure. I'm just making a point to begin with, making that point. Point number two is, I remember the gewaldike simcha of having our first child. Our bechor was born, it was a gewaldike simcha. I also remember at that moment when he was born that we had I remember calling my father, Shalom, and telling him, you know, I'm scared because no one is telling me what to do because there are no instructions. Lahavdil. Monopoly, right? Open it up. Instructions, directions, right? You want to be, you buy a new phone, directions. What am I supposed to do with this live child? What am I supposed to do with him? Then I once heard a saying, and I heard it in two different ways. Either way is pretty powerful. One is more powerful than the other. Rav Beryl Soloveitchik, known as Rav Beryl, Shiva Brisk in Yerushalayim. So Rav Beryl Zatzal said like this. I heard it the following way, and then there was a correction. The way I heard it was more powerful. A Shulchan Aruch was written for Yisayim. Ever hear that word? That word? Shulchan Aruch was written for Yisayim. Meaning Shulchan Aruch was written for orphans. Someone once corrected me and told me he never said that. He said the Mishnah Berurah was written for Yisayim. Mishnah Berurah was written for orphans. But either way, the statement has an incredible message. What's the message? What's the message? Shulchan Aruch, Mishnah Berurah was written for people who are orphans. What's the pshat? Pshat is because if one has parents, one doesn't need the Shulchan Aruch. Or one doesn't need the Mishnah Berurah. Why not? Why not? What kind of statement is that? Why don't you need it? So, I will tell you how I grew up in my house. In my house, when there was a shaila about what to do, and I went to yeshiva and I came back and I would tell my father, Allah Shalom, that I learned this in the Mishnah Berurah, and he would tell me, Aruch HaShulchan, whatever was going on in our own personal, you know, back and forth. The end of the discussion was, Azayta Tata Flekton. The end of the discussion was when he would say to me, or to my brother, or to us, that's the way my father did it. That was the end of the discussion. You know, if you wanted to discuss the theory behind it, fine. But if you want to know what to do, that's the way my father did it, that's the way we're doing it. That's a little bit what Rav Beryl meant. You have to go to look at the Mishnah Berurah when you don't know what your parents did. That's what he was trying to say. Okay, so now, let's stop for one moment, and I'd like to say something, because it's a little scary, because somebody's going to say, look, you know, I didn't go through all the Mishnah Berurah, and maybe my parents didn't go through all the Mishnah Berurah, so, you know, what am I supposed to do? So I think, let's go... Piece number one, darga number one, step number one, plateau number one is like this. A person has to realize that we were created, Elokim asas adam yasha. Kadosh Baruch Hu created us straight, glatt, normal. There's a favorite saying that Marshiva Shlita Shavu Fu Shleim always used to say, always says, Medav Zayin Normal. A person has to be normal. Now, what is the translation of normal? Okay, that's a good question. It's a very long word, short letters with broad meanings. But that's not normal. A person has to be normal. Okay, now let me give you what I mean to say is a few examples. In our house, when we first moved to Chicago, we lived on a third floor walk-up. I went to the Kol. We moved here. I was a member of the founding original 10 of the Chicago Community Kol. And Baruch Hashem, we had a lot of little children. And so I would come home after first Seder or after second Seder. I'd come up the back door, and those of you familiar with three flats in Chicago, I'd come up the back door. My wife would greet me at the door with laundry. I would go down three flights of steps with the quarters and put the laundry in the machine and then switch with the drying, and that's how I'd come on first Seder and second Seder. So my wife once remarked, she said like this, she says, I wonder, our children never see you daven and never see me do laundry. Do they think that fathers do laundry and mothers daven? Because Baruch Hashem, I never missed a minyan, I never davened at home. So they never saw me daven. That was her ha'ara. When I was preparing, I told her one of our children said it. She said, no, none of our children said it. She said it. But it's an interesting thought. Okay, now I want to take this a step further. I want to take it a step further. This happened. My daughter, I said this, I think I even said it Shalosh Shudas last night. My daughter once said, I'm going to embarrass myself. My daughter once said, she was eating at someone's home for Shabbos. She was 5 or 6, very precocious. And she said, the father at the table got up to help serve, or to, whatever he got. He got up to do something, either to serve or to clean. So my daughter pipes up and says like this, my Abba eats challah, drinks Coke, learns Torah, but he never gets up. Okay, now that was a funny line, but it was a zinger of a line. Because it meant that she was saying what she saw. Role modeling, right? She saw that her father, in those days he used to drink Coke, eats challah, and learns, but he never gets up. She never saw me get up. She was saying it perhaps with total innocence. I think there's no malicious intent over here at all, Chas v'Shalom. But she said that, you know, what did it mean? You know, that she was saying over what she saw. Modeling. Okay, now, let's continue. Rav Shmuel Rozovsky, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, one of the greatest Rosh Yeshivas to live in the second half of the 20th century. He was the founding Rosh Yeshiva in Ponovich, and he taught thousands of Talmidim. And he said that he couldn't learn 15 minutes with his own son. Taught thousands of Talmidim. There was a time in Eretz Yisrael that every single Rosh Yeshiva of every yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael was a Talmud of Rav Shmuel Rozovsky. He was the Rosh Yeshiva. The Rosh Yeshiva. And he said he couldn't learn with his son. He couldn't learn with his son. My son, one of our sons, was 8 or 9 years old, maybe 9, and I decided he has to go to Meiriv. I'm pretty sure it was Meiriv. I don't think it was Shacharis. I'm pretty sure it was Meiriv. I want him to go to Meiriv. The big boy already. He should go to Meiriv. It was something like that. Meiriv or Shacharis. I don't know. I was putting the pressure on, and I was putting the pressure on big time. And you know, I didn't feel it was pressure, but I'm. You know, my wife said you're pressuring him too much. I said he has to go to Meiriv. He's a kid. I said no, he's not a kid. He should go. So I went to one of my rebbeim, the Mashgiach Zatzal, in Lakewood. One of the last discussions I had with him, I was in Lakewood, and I ran into his house, and he was sitting there like he was like a malach. He was like such a person at that time of his life. He looks like a malach. So I walked in and I asked him how he was feeling. I said, Rebbe, I have a shayla. I have a machlokes. My son is 9 years old. I want him to go to davening. My wife says, no. What's Mashiach say? So he says, looked at me, he said, Shema Bekola. The pasuk in Chumash, Shema Bekola, right? That's what Avram was told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Listen to your wife. Shema Bekola. Shema Bekola. Okay, so now, you know, a lot of different issues going on here. I'm just presenting, and then we're going to try to tie them all up. But, you know, I want to learn my son. Why can't Rav Shmuel Rozovsky learn with his son? What does that mean? He couldn't learn with his son. Thousands of Talmidim, the best Magid Shir, the best Rosh Yeshiva, that it was hard for him to learn with his son. If somebody would call me up and say to me, I have a 9-year old, I want to go to marry, what would I say? I'd say, leave him alone. It's a kid. No, not my own son. Oh, no, not my own son. Why not? Because it's very hard because, you know, we're dreaming through our children, you know, or we have goals for our children, either goals that we didn't make or goals that we want them to make or goals that we did make and we want them to make them the same way we made them, whatever the situation is, and it's hard for us sometimes to pull back. And look, with the non-pressurized and non-objective, you know, lenses to make sure that they're okay. And we're not making them do something that really they perhaps shouldn't be doing yet. Okay, now, two more things, then I want to switch gears. I'm going with the negative part of the directions. How do we talk on the telephone to our parents, for those of us who have parents, or to our in-laws, for those of us who have in-laws, on the phone in front of our children? Or how often do we talk to our parents or our in-laws on the phone? And then I'll say something else, which it doesn't even need to be said in front of such a chashuv audience, but I'm sure it's not nogeya to anybody here, but I'm just mentioning by way of example. How do we talk b'chlal in front of our children? Do we ever say a word in front of our children that we would never want them, that we would never ever want them to say? Have we ever said a word which would fall under the rubric of nivel peh? Not nice usage of language. Do we ever speak that way in front of them? Ever speak that way in front of those little human beings who maybe come up to our knees or maybe to our hips or whatever? Do we ever speak that way in front of them in a way that we would not want them to speak? Okay, role modeling. Okay, that's one side of it. Let's flip it. Okay, and I'm speaking now with great sensitivity. I don't know everyone's child in this room, and I don't know who might be listening to the tape. But let's talk like this. Does anybody here? Yeah, I think you have to switch sides. Sorry. Does anybody here think that any one of their children has ever wanted to eat a cheeseburger? I'm not talking about McDonald's right now. Has any child ever wanted to eat Milchiks together with Fleishiks? I'm talking about complaining about waiting 6 hours. I'm talking about 6 hours. You know, an 8-year-old child. Anybody ever asked by their 8-year-old, I'd like to put some cheese on my meat? How about, has any child ever asked, I'd like to talk on the telephone on Shabbos? How come no child has ever asked his father, you know, I want to talk on the phone, gone to the phone to talk on the phone on Shabbos? How come no child? I can't think of an example. All the years of being a rabbi, anybody ever called me up and said, my child wants to talk on the phone on Shabbos? Again, I'm saying this with sensitivity because I know people are challenged and people have challenges from their children. I'm just giving an example. Does anybody ever have that? Why not? How come nobody has ever challenged? In a normative situation, no one's ever challenged with their child wanting to talk on the phone on Shabbos, or wanting to eat Milchiks and Fleishiks. Now, I grew up with a television. I happen to love milk, and I still love milk. And I used to love that Leave It to Beaver was able to drink milk with his meat on supper when they ate in the dining room and then on Leave It to Beaver. Okay, but I never had a desire to drink milk with meat because of my parents. Never. You know why? Because I never saw them do it. I never ever once saw anyone in my family ever take a drop of Milchiks to eat with Fleishiks. Never happened. And I never saw anybody in my family ever talk on the phone on Shabbos. It was never nogeya. It was absolutely never nogeya. I can't believe how many years ago it is. But it's about 35 years ago. 35 years ago, it's like embarrassing to even say that, embarrassing, Baruch Hashem, but 35 years ago was the first time that a group of 10 Talmidim of Long Beach went to Lakewood. It was the first time. Before that, it was like one or two at a time. This is the first time, my year was the first time, 10 of us together went from Long Beach to Lakewood. So after being in Lakewood for about, we got there Elul, so maybe sometime after Sukkot, one of the older people in Lakewood went over to one of the Long Beach, we used to call Long Beach guys, one of the Long Beach guys said, you know, in Long Beach, the Rosh Yeshiva must give a shmooze every single day to come to davening on time. So we were kind of enamored by this, and we thought about it. Many of us were in Yeshiva for 7 years, by the Rosh Yeshiva for 3 years. Rav Shiva never gave a shmooze. He never once said about coming. He never once talked about it. You got to come to davening on time. So we were amazed. Here he made a statement. You know why he made the statement? Because 10 guys from Long Beach came to Lakewood, and it happened to be that 8 or 9, or maybe all 10 of us, came to davening on time. Well, yeah, it was a kind of unusual phenomenon. 10 people from one yeshiva, and everybody shows up on time for davening. Right, for davening. Showed up on time for davening. So we try to figure it out, and we realize that the Rosh Yeshiva, now, until he got his stroke, he was Rosh Yeshiva for 33 years. In 33 years, he never came to davening late once. Now, sometimes he didn't come to davening. He wasn't there. He wasn't well. He didn't come to davening. But he never, in 32 years, ever came to davening late once. So you know what? If somebody doesn't come to davening late once in 32 years, you don't need a shmooze about coming to davening on time. You don't need a shmooze. Now, I don't mean anybody here in this room. I don't mean anybody listening on the tape. But if somebody struggles with getting up for davening on time, you cannot tell your kid to get out of bed for davening on time. I mean, you can't do that. Unless you explain to your child that I have a sickness, I have an ailment, I have something wrong with me, whatever it is. But if role modeling is not preaching, role modeling is not demanding, role modeling is not ordering, role modeling is doing. I have a Rebbe who once told us the following, that he had a chavrusa who told him, they were both out of yeshiva ready, my Rebbe was married with kids and his chavrusa was working, so his chavrusa told him that, you know, he's exhausted, he's very much exhausted. He comes home every night, he eats supper, he does homework with the kids, and then he opens up a gemara at the dining room table and every night he falls asleep, out cold, out cold. So this Rebbe of mine said to his chavrusa, he told us this when we were bachur in yeshiva, he said, I told my chavrusa, so why don't you just go to sleep? What are you sitting at the dining room table falling asleep for? Go to sleep. What are you making something crazy for? So he gave an unbelievable answer. He said, I want my kids to know that their father tried to learn. I want my kids to know that. I want my kids to know that. I want them at least to know that their father tried. That's role modeling. Good, my father fell asleep. Okay, so he was exhausted. But he took the Gemara off the shelf, he opened it up, he tried to learn, he fell asleep. At least, maybe I'll try to do the same. At least I'll try to go for the Gemara, right? I'm just saying, again, the concept is I'm not preaching. I'm not preaching. I'm doing. I'm doing. Okay, now, so somebody can say, you told me the downside, that I can do things which are perhaps negative, and I can have things which are pressurized. And then tell me the positive, I can do things in positive role modeling fashion. Okay, but what happens if I make a mistake? I mean, who doesn't make a mistake sometimes? Somebody unleashes words that he doesn't want to say, or she doesn't want to say. Somebody gets up late and misses everything they're supposed to do, even though they didn't want to do it. And somebody does something they don't want their children to see, but they do it in front of their children. Okay, so the first thing is we're all human. And you know what? We're even allowed to tell our children that we're human. It's probably healthy to tell our children that we're human. We're human. Number one. Number two, here's the issue. And this is a hard issue to answer because no one's really going to know when this answer takes place. And that is, just checking the times here. Okay. And that is, at the end of the day, which of course we don't know when the end of the day is, right? But at the end of our parenting session, I don't mean tonight, right? When our children are 16, 18, 20, 22, whenever that ends, what is their feeling towards us? Globally. Good, my father made a mistake one time 16 years ago. We made a mistake twice. We made a mistake 10 times. Overall, was my father a good father? Was my mother a good mother to me? That's the issue. Nobody's expecting anybody to be. I mean, if somebody here is the Chavetz Chaim, as I've said many times, so you have to be Megali yourself. I will sit down. Please become the Rav of Adash Yeshurin, and you know, become the Rav of the city, and finished. But if nobody here is the Chavetz Chaim, so let's be honest with ourselves. We make mistakes. So why can't we be honest with our children and tell them I made a mistake? What I'm allowed to say that I made a mistake. And sometimes we're allowed to ask our children for mechila. I'm still the father, and I'm still going to tell you what to do, and I'm still in charge. I made a mistake, and I apologize. But globally, when I think of my father, Shalom, whenever I kind of like just let myself daydream for a moment of my father, Shalom, so I think of three things all the time. Same three things come up in my mind. First thing that comes up in my mind is having a catch with him on my grandparents' farm, playing with him. Two gloves, two baseball gloves, and having a catch. And that's a gewaltige thing to think of. He took out time to have a catch with me. Yeah, it means taking out time to have a catch with your son, yeah, or playing with your daughter, or whatever the situation might be. Second thing I remember is, as clear as day, is preparing with him for my bechina to get into Long Beach. Happened to be with my for those of you who know me, those of you who don't know me, my grandparents, my mother's parents had a farm, and that's where we used to spend Yontif in the summer, and they had a shul on the farm. And in the shul, there was a set of shas, and we learned together Gemara and Brachas, and that's what I prepared for my bechina for. I remember him taking out the time and learning. He was a great Rebbe. He was no longer Rebbe at that time. He was already working in insurance business. And we learned together. And then the third thing, which I did not know about, but I heard about from my mother, my father didn't tell me, my mother told me, is that he once gave up a job. He was a Gevaldiger Rebbe, and he taught Talmud Torah after being a Rebbe in the morning, and then he was offered a third job to teach Talmud Torah in the evening, which paid $3,000 a year when we were paying $60 a month rent. Imagine, that's a tremendous amount of money. He was a very good Rebbe. And he turned it down because he should be able to be home at night to do homework with him. Now, I did not know that. And when I heard it the first time, I was a teenager. My mother said it on the phone to somebody. Years later, my Rosh Hashiva said, it could be that any success you'll ever have in your life is because of what your father did by giving up that job. Now, I want to bring out this point because this is an issue, and the issue is that, you know, growing up, I don't remember my parents going away at night. My children definitely don't think like that. My children don't remember me staying at home. I remember my children standing at the door, all of them standing in front of the door, telling me and my wife, "You can't go. You went out three times this week. You can't go again." Tonight everybody's at a parenting class, right? I mean, why aren't we all home with our kids? Okay, I believe that. But yeah, you understand what I'm saying? It was a different lifestyle. Those days were different, these days are different, and that creates added pressure as well. So I'm supposed to take questions. I'm going to end in two or three minutes. I want to say like this. If you ask a child the bottom line, what was the most important thing to my father or to my mother? Hopefully their answer is, I was. And hopefully that answer will be portrayed because they feel, not being preached to, they feel there was positive role modeling, but they feel that their parents really loved them. Their parents were concerned for them. That's what they feel. Tzadikim, Bali Midas Toivois, Loim Beisora Secho Lishma. Mem Zayin Sifyud Mishnah Bura says you should daven for your children every day, that they should be Tzadikim, Bali Midas Toivois, Loim Beisora Secho Lishma. Mem Zayin Sifyud. Try to say it at least once a day. Somebody came to the stipler crying about the success of their children, and the stipler said, "Do you daven for them every day?" And the famous line from the stipler was, "Ich vein for mein Chaim ol yedetog." I cry for my Chaim ol. Chaim ol means Reb Chaim Knievsky when he was in his 40s. When he was in his 40s, the stipler was crying for him every day. I don't know how many times he learned Shas by then. I don't know how many Svarim he wrote by then. And the stipler was crying for him every day. So, Yiddishkeit, Rabbi Isai. Yiddishkeit should be happy. Our children should know that our parents love it. Our children should know that our parents love us. And our children should know that our parents want to make us happy. And good, so sometimes making us happy means they have to take us to the dentist, so we'll smile well and be able to eat better when we're old. And they're not going to like it for those few moments when you take them to the dentist or the orthodontist, whatever it's going to be. But they know that that's what our parents want. So that, I would say, is positive role modeling. Rabbi Hoff just walked in. I'm supposed to stop talking at 7:30. It's 7:21. If anybody wants to ask any questions, fine. Otherwise, I can continue talking.
Back to the example with the laundry.
Laundry, yeah. Yeah.
On that type of situation, which is quite common. And it might not be laundry, it might be carpool, it might be cooking, it might be things of that nature. Especially when, like in Rav's example, maybe by the time the children got older, they saw the Rav learning and teaching. But let's say person's in college for a number of years, and then they go out and go to work. So the young children only remember their father doing laundry, and then now they see the father working. So how does
they know if the father ever davens? I mean, right? That's the question. Davens and learns.
So maybe they know. So I
will tell you the following. I thought about, in case somebody's going to ask me this question, I know it's going to be you, but I'll tell you the following. I mean this seriously. I think that davening, I'm not ready to say that therefore a person should daven at home sometimes so his kids should see him daven. I'm not ready to say that. I am ready to say that a person should learn at home sometimes so his kids can see him learn. Even though when Yaakov asks Mommy or Ima, where's Tati or Abba or Daddy, and she says he's in the kola learning or he's in the shul learning or he's giving a shiur or whatever he might be doing, which is very chashuv. And children absorb that lesson as well. There's no question about it. But it doesn't mean that sometimes a father can't say, you know, tonight I'm going to learn at home, maybe even with my chavrusa. Let my children see that, you know, Abba, Tati, Daddy, you know, learns with a chavrusa and they can scream at each other in the house also over two gemaras, you know. That, to a large extent, that's the way it used to be. B, I've also told many people in shul over the years, if your children need you at home at night, so don't learn at night. It sounds sacrilegious. Learn in the morning. You're not a morning person. Too bad. Train yourself to be a morning person. And get up at 5:30 in the morning and learn from 6 to 7, or get up at 5 o'clock and learn from 5:30, and go to sleep at 10 o'clock or 10:30, whatever, instead of going to sleep at 11:30, go to sleep at 10:30. And get up in the morning and be home with your kids at night and finished. If you have to go out for Myrav, go out for Myrav. And if your kids need you, so your kids need you. So learn in the morning. And if you want to learn at night because you want to learn more, so learn at home. I'm a big advocate for learning in shul. I'm learning in kollel. I didn't say not like that. My kids call me Torah man. You know what I mean? And Torah is the ikar, and everything else good. But you know, we have priorities, and our priorities sometimes demand that we have to spend that time at home. Davening. I just heard yesterday from a Jew who's 94 years old. He learnt in the Mir in 1935, and he said that Reb Leib Malin told him, Reb Leib Malin from the Gedolei Hador, who learned in the Mir pre-war Europe and went through Shanghai, Reb Leib Malin told him during Elul, they were sitting at a table eating in the dining room, wherever they were eating, he said, it's Elul. It was Rosh Hashanah. He said, why don't we bench on Rosh Hashanah like we daven Shemoneh Esrei? This year is 94, 95 years old. On Rosh Hashanah, he still benches like for 20 minutes because Reb Leib Malin told him 74 years ago that why don't we bench on Rosh Hashanah like we daven Shemoneh Esrei? So, you know, there are a lot of opportunities for davening experience that may not be davening per se with talis and tefillin, but it can be davening that children see, wow, you know, when my Abba or my Ima benches, they really bench. And there's nothing wrong with mothers and fathers saying brachas out loud. Not telling children to say brachas out loud. Say brachas out loud. Nothing to be embarrassed about. What's the problem on a Tuesday when you go to the closet and you take a pretzel? Well, why can't you make a Burim and Mizonos out loud? Even if nobody acknowledges it. After several weeks and several months and several years of doing that, you know what's going to acknowledge it? Your children are going to acknowledge it. That's what happens. Make a bracha out loud. Why not? So that's also part of davening. So I'm not ready to tell anybody, stay home so your children see you daven, because it's too muzar. I wouldn't be willing to say that. But the learning for sure, and davening, sometimes child will come to shul or whatever will be the occasion, you know, you'll have a child will be able to see you daven. But benching and bracha is a part of that as well. Yes?
The Rav mentioned, you know, admitting to your children at times of years, you know, the frailties, your own frailties as a human being. What's the Rav's thought on using that maybe as a way of saying to the child that maybe this is something we can work on together? This is an area that I also find very challenging. I get angry very easily or whatever, and I see that, you know, let's work on this together. You also seem like you get, you know, the child gets angry easily. Let's see if we can work on this together and somewhat, you know, massage one another.
I'm just repeating the question. I should have repeated it. My finest question as well, probably for the people on the tape. You want to know if a person has a problem, let's say, with anger, should they tell their son or daughter, I have a problem with anger, you have a problem with anger, let's work on our anger together. Let's work on our anger together. My first reaction is, my esteemed colleague speaking in the other room might disagree with me, Rabbi Dr. Loeb Shlita, but I don't like that idea. I don't like the idea because we're not equals. That's saying that we're equals. Like chavrusas work on anger together, friends work on anger together. You're still a father or still a mother. You're the parent. I'm not at law at your level. I don't like it. I have to think about it. But my first reaction is I don't like it. You could say, when I was 8 years old, I had this issue, and this is what I did to work on it. That you could say, because then I'm not equating myself as a 35-year-old, as a 40-year-old, as an 8-year-old. I'm saying that as a 35-year-old, I remember when I was an 8-year-old, and I struggled with the same things you're struggling with, and this is what I did. Maybe it could help for you. You know, that I would, you know, greatly suggest. Because then the child can say, wow, you know, you're admitting that, you know, you understand what I'm going through, because you went through the same thing. But to say it now, I don't think the child is sophisticated enough to see what the subtlety of what you mean, because you don't mean you have the same problem as him and the same level as him, and I think he would feel that. I don't think that that's a good idea, in my humble opinion. I don't think it's a good idea. Okay, anything else? Okay. I am not a yekka, but it's 7:27. I'm supposed to stop in 3 minutes. So if we have no other questions, I would like to add the following. Any opportunity that you have to do something with your children in a ruchniyistic way and make it fun and not make it mandatory is something which you should take advantage of immediately. Example, I'll give you an example. Cleaning for Pesach. You can make it demanding, you can make it choking, and you can make it fun. How can you make cleaning for Pesach fun? Take your children with you. Say, I'm going to clean the car. I'm going to try to vacuum up the Yetzirah. Because Chametz is the Yetzirah. I'm going to kill the Yetzirah. You want to come along with me? I'm going to try to kill the Yetzirah. I'm going to take the vacuum cleaner, shove it in the corner. I'm going to try to kill the Yetzirah. You want to come with me? And that's my example. It may not work for you. Try another example. There's nothing wrong with trying to make Yiddishkeit fun, because it is. I just saw from Rav Olva. We give out candies on Pesach, right? And Shulam, a big advocate. Buy a box of bubblegum. The whole Seder, throw bubblegum all over the place. Anybody ask a good question? Bubblegum. Bubblegum, bubblegum. We have fights in my house. It used to be 10 pieces of bubblegum, 17 pieces of bubblegum, 20 pieces of... It's not my idea. It's Rabbi Akiva's idea. Just in those days, instead of bazooka bubblegum, they gave out roasted nuts. Okay, so kids aren't going to eat roasted nuts nowadays. Whatever. You know, you ought to give your kid a chocolate bar also during the Seder. You made Kiddush already. Eat a piece of chocolate, okay? Kid can eat a piece of chocolate. You can also chew a piece of bubblegum. I'm not saying adults should do it. It's all right. You can do it. Let them be excited. And let them see that their parents are excited and want to share excitement with them about the most important thing. And with this, we'll get back to the bottom line. You know why there's no mitzvah chinuch? Almost. Why? I think two reasons. One is because if there be a mitzvah chinuch, it becomes perfunctory. I once heard a gevaldik word from Rabbi Lich ben Zatzal. He said, you know why you don't make a bracha on Shalach Manas? It's amazing. It's a mitzvah. Make a bracha on shalach manas. Make a bracha on tzedakah is really what he asked. Matanas l'avyoinim. The Rishonim already asked this kasha. He said because the mitzvah of tzedakah should be a mitzvah that's infused with love. And sometimes you have to stop and make a bracha if he comes for functory. Ani, please wait 1 minute. Hold your hand there. 1 second. It takes the rush of love. So there's a rush of love in the midst of chinuch also. I love you. You're my son. I want you to eat in the sukkah with me. You're my daughter. I want you to go walk on Shabbos with me. I want you to learn picky Shabbos with me. Whatever the situation is. You're my daughter. Come stand next to me when I bench licht. You're my son. Help me clean the house. You're my son. Help me put the schach on the sukkah. You're my son. I'm going to buy a little vinesh. Whatever the situation. You're my son. Wrap up my tefillin. Whatever the situation might be. You're my son. I love you. And this is the most precious thing in the world to me, doing mitzvahs. So who do I want to share with? The most precious person in the world to me. You. He said, go do it. Do it with enthusiasm. Not with a whip and not with a gun and not with a board and not with anything. Do it with enthusiasm. Do it with your heart. Do it with your lathe. And then we have the best positive role modeling we can have. And we can be matzliach. Now, I did not say, and I don't mean this, that this is a perfect formula and everything's going to work. Everybody's going to go home. Nobody's going to have any aggravation with their children. Everybody's going to go to sleep whenever I say go to sleep. Everybody's going to eat whenever I say eat. Everything's going to be fine. I never said such a word. I never said such a thing. I'm just saying that in the hustle and bustle in which we live, positive role modeling is something we have to work on. I said it yesterday to somebody, I don't remember who. Like I said it in Shabbos, I don't even remember. It's also kedai to prepare for the Shabbos meals. Ramat Yisrael Solomon, I didn't read the book yet, but I heard that, you know, the Shabbos meal is not a time to sit here in 14,000 pages and don't move out of your seat and sing this Samira. It's a time to have a good time. Have a good time with your children. Go prepare stories with them. Make it exciting. Make it exciting. Doesn't say anywhere in the Torah, in the middle of the meal, you want to jump on the couch with your kids. Hey, go jump on the couch with the kids. I mean, as long as your wife can tolerate it, or you can tolerate your wife jumping on the couch, or whatever. You'll have a good dance around the table in the middle of Shabbos meal. Doesn't say anywhere you have to sit with the knife on the right side and the fork on the left side. You know, let him make a lebedik. Let him make a lebedik. And if he doesn't know the parsha sheet, he doesn't know the parsha sheet. That's Ramat Yisrael, not me. I agree, but he doesn't know the parsha sheet. It's not a time for a test, not school. Shabbos Hill is fun. Fun. Yiddishkeit is fun. It's fun. It's enjoyable. Good. You have to fast in Yom Kippur. You sit on the floor in Tisha B'Av. You sit outside in the sukkah sometimes when it's cold. I understand that. But it's fun. Overall, it's fun. There's nothing more enjoyable than doing the Ratzon Hashem. If we can infuse that into our children, most successful parenting we can ever do. If they should love to be Jews, we've succeeded. The details, they'll figure out. If they know that it's Kabbalic to be a Yid, we've succeeded. Nothing more successful. Nothing more successful. That's what it's all about. I have to stop. I don't want to get in trouble from anybody. The time is over. It doesn't sound like anything else is over, but I'm finished. Okay, I'm stopping. Hatzlacha Rabbah. Thank you all very much for coming. It's an honor and a kavod.
Thank you very much.
This is positive parenting. Hatzlacha Rabbah.
Thank you for listening to this presentation brought to you by Priority One. Please visit us online at www.priority-one.org. That's priority-1.org, where you can download free audio and publications on parenting, teaching, and teens at risk. For more information or to make a donation, please visit us online or call 800-33-4EVER.